The Kinder Transport was a British scheme to rescue nearly 10,000 predominantly Jewish children from Nazi-occupied territories. As a result of Nazi persecution, there was a rise in the number of Jews wanting to emigrate as circumstances for Jews in Germany and its annex countries changed. The Kinder Transport scheme was an opportunity for some of these children to leave their homes and families and seek temporary refuge in Britain. The children arrived from December 1938 to September 1939. With the outbreak of war, borders were closed and all transport ceased. Marion Walter was one of those thousands of Jewish children taken to England, where she thrived as a student of mathematics. She would later emigrate to the United States and become a professor of mathematics, including a final stint in Eugene at the University of Oregon. She moved to the Cascade Manor Retirement Community in 2017, and her interview there by fellow resident Jim Dean was the foundation for the documentary film Remembering Kinder Transport, which was an official selection of film festivals in Australia, England, Sweden, and the United States, produced by filmmaker Dick Jordan. This podcast episode is based on the audio track from that film. Thank you.
Dr. Marion Walter, you are a survivor. You came with 10,000 other Jewish children and escaped Germany and went to England before the war. This was a program called Kinder Transport. At age 10, you escaped from Germany. Eventually, you came to America and earned a doctorate in math education from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and eventually became a University of Oregon professor. This is the story of your escape, survival, and success. Marion, you were born in 1928. And Hitler came to power in 1933. You were just 5 years old when Hitler came to power. Where were you born?
In Berlin.
Do you remember when you first saw a Nazi?
I think it was in Berlin when I was with my mother and we were walking on the street and she hustled me away because, there were going to be crowds and the Nazis, they, just like in the movies you see now, they were marching along with their legs up, and I think she moved me away so that I wouldn't do something stupid.
So she was afraid for you?
I think so.
And for herself?
That I have no idea, I was young. But I remember her sort of leading me out of the direct front line of where they were coming marching. Well, we were in this regular school in Berlin, and I can remember one time I didn't go to school because I was sick, and we had a person looking after us. What do you call that? It's in here probably.
So somebody was watching after you.
Nanny, something like that. And she took me off. I didn't go to school because I wasn't well. But then she took me for a walk in the afternoon. And it happened just when the school was out. And the teacher, and I remember the name of the teacher, Frau Schulze, was coming along. And evidently she then called my mother the next day, the teacher, to ask why I had not said Heil Hitler to her when I met her in the park. And evidently I said that I don't remember doing it, but I remember people talking about it, that if I'm at home, I'm not allowed to say Heil Hitler, and if I'm at school, I have to say Heil Hitler. And when I was with my nanny in the park, I didn't know if I was at home or in school. And the teacher said that this time she would not report my mother, because I was the best in arithmetic and she didn't want to lose me.
So you were a good math student, and that's why she did not report you.
Yeah, because she wanted to lose me out of the class because I was the best in the class.
Did you ever get into trouble in school about saying or not saying Heil Hitler?
No, one time we were outside, and I think we were outside, and the Nazis were coming along, just like you see now in a film, and we had to stand there to say Heil Hitler with your right hand up. And I put my arm on the girl in front because I was getting tired. And I was, that was a no-no. And I was told off, I had to lift my arm. I remember that. And I have a visual memory, I can remember that the Nazis were coming from the right and, we were lined up this way. Couldn't stay in Berlin, and so we were sent to a Jewish boarding school. in southwest Germany in a place called Helling. And that place was famous or infamous because Field Marshal Rommel was born there and died there.
Why were you sent to that school?
Because we couldn't continue to go to, Jews couldn't go to school in the public schools in Berlin. And this was a very good Jewish boarding school.
What did the boarding school look like? What kind of a school was it?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was in the forest, and there were four different houses, a main house and three other houses. And I was the only girl in the junior school up to that point. They only had boys in the junior school, but because they took my sister, who was older, they had to take me. So I actually slept with the older girls in the main house.
So you were in public school at
yes.
that time?
Yes.
But after a while, you could not go to a public school.
Yeah, and then we were sent to this Jewish boarding school. Mm-hmm. And
what did you experience there?
Oh, it was a great school. We did lots of arts and crafts and things outside and so on. But also we saw the tank maneuvers, you know, German tanks maneuvering. And I remember there was the tanks, either had an A or a B, because there were two sides fighting each other, I mean, for practice. And one of them was, either the A was red, I think the A was red, and the B was blue. And we could watch that, and I always wondered how the world didn't know that Germany was rearming, because I was 8 years old, and I saw it. And the soldiers must have known it was a Jewish school, and that we didn't get meat, because they gave us sausage, I remember.
The German soldiers gave you sausage?
Yes, because we were on the grounds, and they were on the grounds, and I can remember they giving us the ends of sausages, you know, salami.
So the German soldiers were friendly to you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Did they treat you badly because you were Jewish?
No, I mean, those soldiers who came to the grounds, I don't know what they were doing, they were very nice to us. I mean, our headmaster was taken away because we were told he was going to be taken away, not to look out of the window, and of course we did, but he was brought back. So I don't know how he arranged that.
Do you know why the headmaster was taken away for a time?
No. I mean, I think all Jewish men were interned or taken away. I don't know. I was 8 years old.
But he came back to
camp? Yeah. We watched him come back, yeah. So he must have come back pretty soon, you know, like, I don't really remember, but...
Now, you told me that Rommel's home was on that campus.
Yeah, that one of the houses. And I have to just tell you this, you don't need to record it. But Peter, who lives here, you know, Peter, and he was born in Germany, and he asked me where I was born and so on, and I told him about Hellingen and about Rommel, and I said, we never found out what happened to Rommel, whether he died or whether he committed suicide. Peter knew the story. The story was that he was threatened that if he didn't commit suicide, his family would be killed.
Was it at the campus there where you burned books?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Oh. I don't know, but I can remember there were certain books, and I don't know which books, but that obviously Jews were not supposed to have, and they were put in these big metal things where they used to burn the rubbish outside, and they were set on fire, and we had to go out and stir the ashes, and because a lot of people don't know that here, that if you burn a page, you can still read what was on it. So we had to stir it, so that when the Germans came, they wouldn't be able to tell what books we had burned.
You were told to burn books. Why and what books were they?
I have no idea what books they were, but there must have been books that Jews were not supposed to have, because the Nazis were going to come and look at them.
What did you think and what did you feel when you learned you were going to go to England?
I think, if I remember rightly, I cried because I thought I would never learn English. I knew it was a different language, and I tried to think of the most difficult word in German that I would never learn English of. And the most difficult thing, word in German I thought and thought was, that I came up with, was Edelweiss.
Edelweiss was the most difficult word.
In German, that I thought I would never learn English of.
And there's no English translation for Edelweiss.
It's Edelweiss.
Your parents said goodbye at the train station. Were you afraid at the train station?
I don't remember that I was afraid. I can tell you on which side of the train I sat, and I can tell you which way the train went, because I can remember my father trying to run with the train a little bit.
Oh.
And I remember at the train station with a lot of people sitting, standing in a circle, my father, my mother, my uncle, and everybody, and lots, you know, relatives of the children, other children. But then when we were on the train, it was only my father that tried to run along the platform. And, yeah.
Do you remember what his face looked like as he was running along?
No.
You told me that you still don't like train stations.
Yeah.
Why?
I think because it reminds me of that of time. It must be, you know. We put it this way: when I see somebody off on the train or something, I see that picture in my mind a little bit.
Your sister was also on the train.
Yes. Although actually I don't remember where she, I don't remember that she was in my compartment, because in my compartment was that older girl, I think I told you about, who had a ring on her finger. And we were not allowed to have anything of value with us. And so stupidly she let us, we were all young, discuss where should she hide the ring, because we were not allowed to have anything like that. And us young kids decided the best place to hide it was for her to wear it, and she wore it. And the Nazi came in and looked through all the suitcases and everything. And the thing that amazes me was that, not that he didn't find it, but all of us kids must have been staring at her hand and her ring, that he didn't notice that.
So she hid it in plain sight.
Exactly, that's a good expression, yes.
And the Nazi didn't notice it?
No. I mean, it's one thing that they didn't notice the ring, but we must have all been staring at it.
You said to me that you thought it was an adventure, the train trip.
See, I can't remember that, but if I said that, I don't really remember. It wasn't, I mean, and I don't know if I told you this at the time, but we have kinder transport meetings. And at one of them, I got the address of people who came on the kinder transport, and I asked them, who remembers or what do you remember of the Dutch ladies coming to the train to bring us food when we crossed the border into Holland? And I got a whole pile of answers, and some of them are, archived in the War Museum in Amsterdam, and some in the Jewish Museum in Portland.
You had a travel document, and you showed me a copy of your father's travel document, and your name and his name, they were both changed.
Yeah.
Tell me about that change.
My name is, in the German birth certificate, you can have several first names, and the one that you're called by is not the first name, but the one that's underlined. So my birth certificate said Ilse Marion Walter with Marion underlined, so Marion was my name. But it's not Jewish, so if your name was not Jewish, you had to sign your name with the word Sarah in it. And if you were a man and the name was not Jewish, my father's name was William, then he had to sign it with the name David in it. So many of my, you know, some of my things are signed Ilse Marion Sarah Walter, to indicate that it was Jewish.
So the purpose of that was for the Germans to be able to identify you and your father as Jewish?
Yeah.
You left on March 15th, 1939, which was just 5 months before the war.
Okay, I mean, March 15th, yeah.
Describe for me the train trip that you went on through Germany and then over toward England.
I remember when we got to the border of Germany and Holland, the Nazis got out, and I seem to remember, and it sounds a bit funny, but I seem to remember that I felt very smart, that I knew that when we came to the border of Germany and Holland, that there wouldn't be a line on the ground to mark the border. And the Dutch ladies, some ladies came to the border where the Nazis got out, and these metal, tall cylindrical metal vats with cabbage and potato and meat all mixed up together, and bars of chocolate, and I think some comic books, but they were in Dutch, so we couldn't understand them.
You traveled through Holland on the train and reached the coast. What happened when you reached the Dutch coast heading towards England?
There was a boat ready, and I just thought about it recently that we were immigrants, but we didn't have to worry, would the boat sink or where would it go, or, you know, would we get shot where we were going? It was just very smooth. We were getting on a boat, and the only thing that happened was the crossing must have been at night, and it was very rough sea, and my uncle had given me this lovely little alarm clock. I can see it now. It was cubical and kind of gold-colored, and it rolled off the side of the thing by my bed and smashed, so that was not a good omen. And it was very rough during the night, and we got seasick. And then in the morning, we were given black tea for breakfast, and none of us had ever had black tea, and we didn't want to drink any black tea. And then when we got to Harwich, when we crossed the channel, the train, every compartment on every seat in the train had a sandwich and a banana.
What was your reaction when you got to England and found that banana and that sandwich? What was your emotional reaction?
I think we were glad and ate them. And then when we got to London, I mean, I didn't know it then, but London has many railway stations. We were met by some very distant relatives that we didn't know, obviously. And they took us by car. Oh, and then they took us to the car. You know, they met us, and they took us to, we had to go to a police station, and that was scary, because as we went up, sort of was like a railing and stairs up to the police station, and then the door clanged shut behind us. And that was, for a minute, was kind of scary, because I didn't know we were going to get out, you know, because it felt like we were locked in. And then we met these people, and they put us in a car and didn't warn us that the traffic was going on the wrong side of the street. And that was scary, and maybe my dislike of being in a car even today, you know, I mean, I don't like, if I have to go to Portland, I don't like doing it by car, you know.
Where did you live in England?
Oh, we spent one night with these relatives, you know, that we'd never met before. And then the next morning they drove us to Eastbourne. And Eastbourne was on the channel, on the coast. It was probably over an hour, at least an hour away. They drove us there, and they drove us straight to a shop. And I remember the name of the shop, called Bobby's, to buy a school uniform. And that was awful, because I was kind of allergic to wool, and we had to wear long black wool stockings. So even just to try them on, you know, and then have to wear them every day was awful.
Did you go to school in Eastbourne?
Yeah, it was a boarding school.
What was it like? What did it look like?
Well, it's a bit complicated because when we went there, there was a school called St. Helens, and then they joined with a school named West Hill, and it became St. Helena's West Hill, so I can't tell you what it looks like. You know, I'm confused to which building we moved in. But it was dormitories, and I remember two things. They kept my sister was older, so she slept with the senior girls, and I was junior, but they kept us apart so that we wouldn't speak German to each other and we would learn English. But the other thing they did, which I like to tell people here who are looking after immigrants, when they took us to the dormitory, and actually there were curtains between each bed and so on, but when they took me to the dormitory and showed me my bed, there was a panda on it. And I'd never seen a toy panda before, you know. And that really was very comforting. So if anybody's looking after immigrants here now, some little thing like that, and how many years ago, and I still remember, I can still see that panda.
How long did you stay in Eastbourne?
I think until May, when we had to evacuate because of Germans bombing, coming to Cherbourg, and they were expecting the invasion, you know. So I think, was it May? I'm not sure.
This was around Dunkirk?
When the Germans got to Dunkirk.
Do you remember the sound of the bombs?
Yeah, because I remember waking up. Because, that was, the bombs were further north. That was when we had already evacuated, when we slept out in the kennels, you know.
So you were evacuated because of the threat of invasion?
Yes, I think so.
And you went, where did you go?
Well, we first went to the friend of the headmistress, because the headmistress asked parents, do you want your kid to be evacuated? And only about 7 or 8 parents said yes. And the headmistress's friend had room for 7 or 8 kids in her house. But when the day came to be evacuated, 40 kids went. And so where were we going to sleep? And the friend of the headmistress there, they had the second biggest kennel for breeding Cocker Spaniels. So they took the 40 dogs out of the kennels and bought blow-up mattresses and whitewashed the kennels and bought blankets, and we slept there during the summer. The reason they bombed around the kennels was not because they were trying to hit us, but there were many, many flights to Liverpool. The Germans came and bombed Liverpool very, very heavily. I don't know why. And if they didn't reach Liverpool and had to go back to Germany, they had to drop their bombs somewhere because they didn't want to land with bombs. So the bombs that we got, and we saw the shrapnel and we could hear them, were the ones that were dropped on their way back to Germany.
For a time you lived in a 14th century abbey. Tell me about that.
Well, after we couldn't continue to live in the kennels because it was too cold, we moved to a big country house for one term, and we couldn't stay there because they needed it for a hospital or something. And then I think we moved somewhere else where we couldn't stay, and finally we moved to Combermere Abbey, which was a 14th century abbey. And by the way, they now have converted the stables to self-catering cottages, and a few years ago they were voted the best self-catering cottages in England. So if you go to England, please go there, stay there. And the granddaughter of the person who was there when I was there is there now, and she writes to me very affectionately, years and so on. Thank you.
You were reunited with your family in England during the war. Tell us about that. Tell me about that.
I know my father was interned, and everybody was interned. They interned Jews because they couldn't sort Jews from spies quickly enough, so they interned them. And he was interned in the Isle of Man, and I remember him saying that hearing that he liked it there because the hotels were really nice, and he enjoyed meeting his cronies from Berlin. But then he got sick, and he was hospitalized in London. And I remember visiting him in the hospital, because I can remember going to in his room and seeing all the instruments, you know, maybe breathing oxygen, on, and then he died.
Your father died in 1943.
Yes. So.
You said that the Jews were separated in England. Were men, Jewish men, separated?
Yeah, I think of the men.
What about women?
I don't know anything about that. I think it was just the men.
Your mother got to England. Tell me about that.
I don't really know the details. I do know, and not on how, I do know that when she got to England, she got to Harwich or wherever it was, and she didn't have the train fare to go to London. And somebody gave her the money to go to London. And then she worked illegally. She wasn't allowed to work, but she worked doing housework.
You graduated from school in 1944 and taught at the Abbey. Talk about that a bit.
Well, we took the legal school leaving age was 16. So in 1944, I turned 16, and so I could leave school. And they had missed me. My sister and I, we didn't have anywhere to go during the holidays, so we stayed with a friend of the headmistress who had the kennels. And she called me and asked me, "Marion, have you decided what to do yet?" Well, I didn't decide what to do, and nobody asked me what I was going to do, so I said no. And she said, well, and I remember the name of the teacher, Mrs. Littler, the math teacher, the only math teacher we had, has unexpectedly left. And there's no way that during this winter, during the war, that we can, in the country, that we can get a new math teacher when you come back and teach math. But you'll have to sleep in the dormitory still, but you'll get 10 shillings a week. And I said I would do that. And the 10 shillings a week was enough money for me to bicycle to the nearest village and get fish and chips. So I did that. So I never had any teaching classes, but I ended up teaching teachers how to teach.
In London, you did study math at the Regent Street Polytechnic. Talk about that experience.
Yeah, well then, when I said I'd rather, then the headmistress said, well, what was I going to do? And she suggested something, I can't remember what it was. And I remember saying, I'd rather teach than do that. And then she said, you have to go to college. And I didn't know what that meant. And so my mother was sent around the colleges in London to see, in order to get a degree in math at a college, you had to take math and physics. But I had no physics during the war in school. So the question was which college would take me to do a math and physics degree when I hadn't had any physics in high school. So my mother went around, and there was a place, it was called the Regent Street Polytechnic, who said they would take me. It's now called the Regent Street University. And I went back later, many years later, to thank Dr. Topping for taking me without having had any physics. But I forgot to tell him that not only was that brave, but I never told him that I was afraid to light a match. So, so the first time I lit the Bunsen burner, and I lit the match finally, which was a great achievement, I was so scared that I dropped it. You know, the Bunsen burner lit, but everything collapsed.
Where were you when the war ended?
Oh, that's funny, by the way, the answer is that I was in London, and it was announced on the radio, I guess, that the king or the queen, whoever it was at that time, was going to come up the Thames in a barge. So I went to Waterloo Bridge to see the barge. But I can't remember if it was the king or the queen.
You told me there were fireworks during the barge trip.
Yes. As we were watching the barge come, there were fireworks, yes.
After the war, you came to the United States. Tell us about that travel.
I went to the Regent Street Polytechnic and left. And my father died in May 1943. And so we were connected to a synagogue in London because of he died. And the rabbi happened to be American, and Rabbi Reinhardt. And he talked to my mother, and he said to her, "We don't know what's going to be after the war." My father had died, her brother had escaped by foot to Spain, and from Spain to Cuba, and from Cuba to America. I don't know that we knew that he'd come to America. Anyway, he said to my mother, "You may want to go to America after the war. It's best to apply for your visa now because it'll be very locked up." And so we did that. And then the amazing thing was the visa came through very quickly. And then it was very difficult to get a boat because all the boats were booked up. But then it turned out that a ship called the New Amsterdam, which had been out of service, was put back into service unexpectedly quickly when they mended it. And so we had passage very quickly. And
so you came to America.
Yes, and my uncle met us. It was January 9th, and it was freezingly cold. And we had a letter to somebody, Bloom, I think was the last name, at Hunter College for something. And he told me that it cost $10 a semester to register for the whole term, and that I could earn $2.50 for tutoring an hour. So I tutored for 4 hours on that Monday, I think, and I earned my tuition for the term.
Then you went on and earned your doctorate and became a University of Oregon professor. And so you went from Germany, through Holland, through England, to the United States, and continued to be a success.
But let me say one thing. I did end up here at the U of O, but I taught also 9 years at Simmons College, and I set up their math department there. So I'm going to boast and say they gave me an honorary degree for that.
An honorary degree? What was the honorary degree?
From Simmons College, I guess bachelor's or not, I don't know. But enough that they gave me a hood. One of the things I'm proud of, I had no idea what was happening. When I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, a teacher came to me and said he was going to have to teach in elementary school, and he doesn't know how to teach in elementary school. He was a high school teacher. And, what could I help him with? And I use a lot of concrete material with teachers who teach kids, stuff that they can handle. And I realized that if he sat in front of me and I got out what's called a geoboard, which is a board with nails that you put rubber bands on and make shapes, that he would never do anything with me sitting opposite to him. And so a friend helped me get the names of all the math people of all the little town areas around Cambridge. And I invited them, and I did a workshop with all of them to show them how to use this material. And I gave that workshop once a month for a year. And then I went away, and one of my students did it for a year. And when I came back, they said, no, I could do it again. I said, no, 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 you're grown up now, you can do it. And they formed something called BAMS, Boston Area Math Specialist BAMS. And then 50 years later, they had a celebration for 50 years of BAMS. And I'm proud of BAMS still exists.
What do you think and feel now about Germany and the Germans?
You know, that I've read that question again, and all I can say is I don't know how the mayor of Berlin knew, but I guess from the Kinderzentrum. We got a letter at some point saying that when you turn 71, if you've never been back to Germany, the Berlin mayor or whatever will invite you. Paid for 1 week in Germany. And I couldn't decide, should I accept that and be sorry I went, or not go and be sorry I didn't go. I couldn't make up my mind, you know, about wanting to go. I didn't want to go back to Germany, really, because I did once go to there was a math meeting, and I didn't want to go, but then somebody from England said they would go with me, and I wanted to, but we were allowed to leave with only 10 mark. And I wanted to, when I came through customs, you know, back, I wanted to return the 10 mark and say, thank you very much. I didn't need it, but I didn't do that. But anyway, it then turned out that I wanted to go to a math art conference in Spain that started just when the German week was going to end. So I did go to Germany. And they took us around, they toured us everywhere and showed us all kinds of monuments. I remember the only one I remember, I mean, two I remember. One I remember was a high monument where people were rounded up to go to Auschwitz, you know, and many monuments like that. But the one that really was clever was in a plaza between the library and the university. And there was a piece of glass in the ground, and you would never stop to look at it if somebody hadn't told you. And you look at it, and what could you see? You're supposed to look into it, and you saw empty shelves. And what you were supposed to think was, what is a library without books? Because that's where they burnt the books. They, you know, they went.
Oh, the shell was a pit where they burned books?
There was a hole, I mean, there was a piece of glass on the ground. And evidently, it was the area of the place, of the plaza, between the university and the library, where they burnt books that they weren't supposed to have. You know.
Well, Marion, you've had a wonderful life. You've had a successful life. You survive the Germans, you escaped Germany and went on to earn a doctorate and to teach, and I thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about your experience.
This is travel writer and filmmaker Dick Jordan. Thanks for listening to this episode of my Imagery and Words podcast, which covers books, writing, traveling, and the imagery and art of photography and filmmaking. If you enjoyed Remembering Kinder Transport, please consider subscribing to this podcast.